081238, United States v. Gonzalez. Mr. Wilmoth, come on up.
Good morning. May it please the Court. This one, I don't think, is too complicated. And I say that despite the government's assertions in their reply brief that some of the position taken by the defendant appellant is absurd and frivolous. The fact of the matter is that this case is a simple application of the independent source doctrine and the two factors that are part of that doctrine set forth by the Markling case out of this circuit in 1993. And then there is a very small subset of facts that relate to the application of that doctrine that took place during the course, or that was elicited during the course of the evidentiary hearing in June of 2007, in which one law enforcement officer testified and a citizen witness about what transpired at the Southside resident in question. And what the totality of those circumstances are is as follows. The law enforcement officer proceeded to this Southside residence for the infamous knock-and-talk narcotics investigation with the express purpose of, as he stated, not to look for a search warrant, but to attempt to get consent to do a search. And he was successful in doing that, getting consent from the defendant appellant's mother and sister, and he and a partner began to look around the bedroom of the defendant appellant and uncovered in plain view narcotics, small amount of cocaine base, and some marijuana. What caught the eye of law enforcement then was a Nike shoebox next to some marijuana, and law enforcement took a flashlight and kind of went around the shoebox and then opened it up, exclaimed, "Whoa, what have we here?" And saw what came to be an excess of 50 grams of crack cocaine, the most serious allegation against Mr. Gonzalez, and then the law enforcement officer closed the shoebox. He then took it upon himself to call into the room the mother and sister of the defendant appellant and said, "I want you to see what else your brother has been involved in," and then closed the shoebox. And then by the law enforcement officer's own testimony, he froze the scene and indicated there would be no further searching going on, despite the fact the other law enforcement officer continued to look around. The testimony is then that those two law enforcement officers in the room had a 15 to 20 minute discussion about what to do next, and what they decided to do next was to procure a search warrant. The government seems to believe that the defendant appellant's proposition that what was found in the Nike shoebox was found in the Nike shoebox, which Judge Stattmiller has determined to be an unlawful observation, which has not been appealed by the government. The defendant believes it absurd that the government believes it absurd that Mr. Gonzalez believes that observation in the Nike shoebox, that illegal activity, prompted or had an effect on law enforcement's decision to secure a warrant.
But the warrant application did not rely at all on what was in the
warrant application
shoebox.
The warrant application, mysteriously enough, was completely...
That's not mysterious. They didn't want to rely on that because they had a question about whether that was legal or not. So they relied on what they had.
Then if not mysterious enough, I think significant, because I think it's a fair and reasonable inference that the search warrant was procured so that law enforcement could actually lawfully get into the shoebox.
Sure. It probably looks like it was, but does that make it illegal?
I think it does, because I think then the totality of the evidence is that the search warrant would not have been procured but for the observation in the shoebox. It was, in fact...
It may not have been sought, but it would have been issued, I would think.
It certainly would have been issued, but that is only one prong of the Markling test. And make no mistake about it, the defense does not indicate that the warrant-issuing magistrate judge was affected at all by the observation in the shoebox, because, as we know, it wasn't included in the shoebox. But what this case is about is the second prong of the Markling analysis, is would law enforcement have procured the search warrant, decided to get the search warrant, but for the observation in the shoebox. Now, trying to understand why the government believes that, the position of the defendant appellant is that it had to have an effect on law enforcement. It had to have some prompting under the totality of the circumstances. I mean, I think this was more than law enforcement taking a 15-minute break to decide, now, do we have enough consent to go on, or should we get a search warrant because we're concerned about that consent? I submit to you the shoebox is the prompting or the effect. I think trying to search whether the defense appellant is missing something here, what I think might be most important, or maybe ripe for further analysis by the court, is what degree is the effect on law enforcement's decision to secure the warrant based upon what Judge Statler has said to be illegal conduct. And I think that probably any type of incidental observation that the district court found to be illegal, any kind of incidental observation that might have had a minor effect upon law enforcement's decision to seek a search warrant probably wouldn't call for relief. But there must be some type of substantial factor, causation on law enforcement's decision to seek a warrant. Some type of more likely than not that they wouldn't have sought a warrant but for the observation in the shoebox or but for the illegality. And I think the facts of this case establish that it's a reasonable inference that what was seen in the shoebox, the in excess of 50 grams of crack cocaine, the charge that brings the minimum mandatory 10 years imprisonment, that is what caused law enforcement to seek the search warrant in this case. You know, the Markling case and the cases since that deal with the independent source doctrine, and the cases even before Markling that dealt with it, say that the reason why it's important is because it tries to reconcile the exclusionary rule, the rule that attempts to deter unlawful police conduct, with the need for society to prosecute crimes, or the government to prosecute crimes on behalf of society, the need for the government to have evidence against defendants in a case. I think in this case, in the totality of the circumstances, this is a call for the exclusionary rule, because this is not a case where the application of the independent source doctrine puts the government in a worse position than they would have been without the illegal observation in the shoebox. They get put back in exactly where they were, which is doing a consensual search of the room, which didn't allow them to get in the shoebox, where they observed some controlled substances in plain view, which wouldn't have got them to the crack cocaine, and subsequently some firearms in another closed container, a dresser in the room, which really formed the basis of this criminal case against Mr. Edgardo Gonzalez. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gianpietro.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Mr. Wilmoth, my name is Gordon Gianpietro. I'm an assistant United States attorney in Milwaukee, and I represent the appellee United States in this case. Let's get right to the point. It seems that there's no dispute that one of the prongs of the Markling test is not in dispute, that, in fact, since the information was not given to the magistrate, it did not affect his issuance of the search warrant. The prompted by language that's in Markling is what is obviously the dispute in this case. Mr. Wilmoth has argued that there's a logical inference or reasonable inference from the testimony that what prompted it was finding this motherlode of...
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, the difficulty with that being perhaps a reasonable inference is the fact that there is, in fact, suppression testimony as to what prompted the obtaining of the search warrant.
That's also ex post facto.
In what sense, Your Honor?
And that is to say the decision that you're relying upon or the testimony you're relying upon is after the fact, too. And if you just take up to the point where they went out for the warrant, it looks to me like there's a legitimate position that the search warrant was prompted by the illegal investigation.
Judge, what I want to focus on, though, is the actual testimony of Sergeant Herman.
Afterward. Go ahead.
Well,
lay it on me.
In the record at 27, it's the suppression hearing transcript, really between pages 70 and 77, he testifies that the rationale for going to get the search warrant was his experience based on years of conducting these sorts of
investigations. They had that experience without a 15-minute discussion, too, didn't they?
Well, Judge, there is no evidence in the record to really zero in on what that discussion was about, except Sergeant Herman's testimony.
He would have gone for the warrant, even if he hadn't known about that.
I think that's clearly the finding.
Why didn't he go for it in the beginning?
Judge, all I can rely on is his testimony before the district court.
But you don't, you know, one of the things I'm suggesting is that you don't have to take that as gospel truth. ability of all people to rationalize their own behavior backwards is marvelous. I've done it myself for years.
Judge, I would submit that the standard here is whether the district court clearly erred in his analysis.
Yeah,
and he is considering the testimony of Sergeant Herman, and he's concluding that he was truthful with respect to that testimony.
Well, I don't doubt at the moment he said it, he had rationalized himself into believing it. What I'm saying is that it's perfectly rational to think they wouldn't have gone to the warrant at all if they hadn't seen what they saw in the box.
But I don't think it's fair for this court to say that the district judge clearly erred in putting the weight on his testimony as opposed to the other possible inference.
We're both relying on exactly the same thing.
Yeah. But the difficulty, Judge, I think, is the district judge is considering what of a number of different possibilities are the facts. And Mr. Wilmoth alluded to the fact that they saw some drugs in plain view, and that wouldn't have been sufficient, or that wouldn't have inspired them to go get a search warrant. That's not exactly a fair statement of the record. There was a scale in plain view with white powdery substance.
What more did they want?
Judge, I guess what I'm suggesting to you, Judge, is that are the facts are sufficient.
Once you've got sufficient facts so you can get a search warrant, stop what you're doing and go get the search warrant. And quit guzzling around and you can't screw things up. That's about the bottom line of the thing. We wouldn't be here if they had done that.
But I don't think that's fair, Judge. You're dealing with law enforcement officers who are trying to get it right. And as they're conducting this consensual search, and they do find something even more exciting than what they've already seen in plain view.
Mr. Giampietro, oddly enough, I've been involved in law enforcement for some 51 years. No, longer than that, 58 years. And I am not unaware of what you're talking about. I know what the police officers are doing, and I know I yield to no one in my admiration of them, or prosecutor either. But once in a while, they do take one step forward when they should.
And, Judge, I believe they rectified it here. I think the independent source doctrine allows them to make a mistake and recover. And the question is, based on this record, can you say the district court erred, clearly erred, in finding that what prompted the officers to go get the search warrant was merely looking in the box, the Nike box? And I don't think this court can reach that conclusion based on this record. So I don't suggest that the officers did not make an error. I'm arguing that the independent source doctrine forgives them for that error, and that there's nothing in this record that you can say the district judge was clearly erred in his analysis.
The officer forgave himself, and I'll be happy to forgive him too, but I'm not sure I forgive the record. Go ahead.
Well, as the district judge forgave him as well, Your Honor, so I'm gonna rely on that. So I think we've clarified exactly the issue before this court. What was it that prompted Sergeant Herman to go after a search warrant? The government submits the district court did not clearly err in concluding that what prompted it was the wealth of other evidence and Sergeant Herman's testimony that they were concerned that consent would later be withdrawn. If there are no further questions, I'll rest on our briefs and ask the court to affirm the conviction. Thank you.
As I look at Judge Stadtmiller's decision on the motion, which is part of the appendix, he really doesn't focus on at all the fact that law enforcement went and got a warrant despite what was in the shoebox because they really weren't confident about the lawfulness of the consent. He doesn't say that at all. In fact, what he does, and I think this is where the error lies, is he coalesces the two Markling factors. Judge Stadtmiller says, obviously it didn't prompt law enforcement to seek the search warrant because they didn't include it in the search warrant application. I think that's error. That's all I have.
So these rules are very difficult for cops on the street.
Right.
The little nuances of these sorts of rules. And here, it seems to me that the police acted fairly reasonably because they could have easily said, the shoebox was open when we walked in and saw all this stuff. So they lie about that. Then they don't get a search warrant. Here they didn't lie about that and went out and got a search warrant based on other information that they had. So, you know, I think it kind of cuts both ways here. And these exclusionary rules are difficult, my point, for police on the street. They're difficult for lawyers, judges.
Yeah, and
here I think they... they acted reasonably.
Well, and as I analyzed the facts in this case, I considered whether there was some type of notion that they exercised good faith in this instance. But the fact of the matter is that the court found that the search into that Nike shoebox was not lawful. And so then the question would they have obtained a search warrant? And unfortunately, despite their actions, good faith or otherwise, I think the court should have determined that they wouldn't have obtained a search warrant because of the mother load that they had observed. Thank you.
I thank you both. Case will be taken under advisement.